the Gospel of Luke, chapter 21. Luke chapter number 21. Mentioned this morning, it's always interesting. My kids are always, well, not always, but a lot of times they're asking what you're going to preach about Sunday, Dad, and I don't very rarely ever let them know too much ahead of time what's going on. Most of the reason is because I don't like people's reaction when you tell them too much early. You know, I don't want to think about it, but usually we don't say too much about it and all of that. They're always curious. They always want to know, and I can even remember thinking to myself during the week, what's my pastor going to preach about, or you know, what's going to be the topic. And you know, so there is that curiosity, there is that thought process. But for the pastor, it's quite different because, you know, there's that burden always of what's the next message, what's God's people need. And sometimes you get that message at the last minute. Sometimes that's because you weren't ready to receive it. You weren't in the place you needed to be. You weren't studied, prepared, and otherwise walking with God as needed to receive that message. And it could be for another host of reasons. But there are other times when you get that message days in advance and you really see the full workup, if you will, of the thought and the message. And patience was like that this week for me. It was early in the week, probably Wednesday, the Lord had brought us to the thought of patience. Hadn't quite yet settled on exactly how to bring it out, but you know, we thought about that and started studying Friday morning and put some thoughts together. And, you know, Friday afternoon, or right around noon, me and my wife were standing at the checkout over here at the B&B or IGA. It hasn't been B&B for years. But, you know, we were standing there and we had somewhere to be, and we stopped to grab some supplies really quick and thought we'd be in and out. We're standing there in line, two people in front of us, you know, and the lady that's checking out had all of her stuff ran through, and she goes, "Oh, I need something." And so she runs off to the store and she starts shopping again. You know, so we're standing there going, "Man, what, you know?" And then, the guy in front of us, he does the same thing. So I'm standing there going, "Yep, it's a week to preach about patience, isn't it?" I mean, it was just so right in my face. It was just, an amazing thing. And then Saturday had somewhere to be. About noon Saturday after we got done here, and had about 5 minutes to get there and come upon a funeral procession, you know, going the other way. And so being the, you know, a respectful type, pulled over, but all the while going, you know, okay, patience, Lord, patience, right? And then last night we decided to get some pizza for dinner. And so went in to pick up the pizza, and the computer was down. You know, everything's computerized. So they had our pizza done, but they had no way to take payment for that pizza with the computer being down. And so stood there for a while, and still thinking about the whole patience thing, saying, "This is the week, isn't it?" And of course, in the flesh, thinking a little bit about, "Man, you should have picked a different topic." So, you know, I had these things going through. But the real blessing was, at least on the financial end of things, we waited, didn't say much, just waited patiently for whatever was going to happen. And finally they just said, "Take it, you know, it's our fault, we'll take the loss." And so we got free pizza last night. And so that's kind of the moral of the story this week is, you know, Lord deals with us and shows us things, and sometimes we don't really get it, if you will. And if I hadn't been focused already on patience this week, I wouldn't have linked all those things together. It just wouldn't have happened. But the Lord deals with us or gives us those examples more often than we really, you know, think about. And so tonight we come back to this subject of patience, and you might just call it part two from this morning. But as we were studying, we came across this verse, and the Bible has so much to say about patience. We just want to read this one verse in the words of Christ here. He says, "In your patience, possess ye your souls." In your patience, possess ye your souls. What really sticks out to me most about this verse is the word "your." Here it's used as a possessive adjective that gives us you know, more information, if you will, about the noun here, which is the soul. And it shows us here that patience is a possession. Patience is something that we are called to have, and indeed we are instructed to have, as we noticed this morning, being in need of. But as we allow ourselves to sink into this verse and what Christ is saying, He says, your patience, that which you have, use it. Use it to live. Use it to serve. Use it to the betterment, if you will, of your life and your walk and the things around you. And that's why we started off this morning by kind of pointing out the fact that patience isn't just not losing your temper and those kind of things I described even just now, but being a much deeper subject, as Christ alludes to here. He says, use it, possess it, understand it is yours. It is something you are to have, kind of like your faith, your belief, your trust, your salvation. All of those things we know are present possessions that we have and that we are to use to glorify God with. We use them all the time. We know in Philippians, Paul says, work out your own salvation with fear and trembling. And so we may not think about it so much as a possession or as something that is as large as it really is, but he says, patience, use it. Use it to affect the entirety of your life. Let us not look upon patience as a particular grace for a trying season or a moment in life. But I think patience is better looked at or thought about as a habitual frame that is manifested in us each and every day in our daily walk. That is manifested by a calmness, that is manifested by an ability to deal with whatever comes along in life without being overran, without being put into the place where we just don't know what to do. Patience has always been a requirement for God's people. All the way back to the Garden of Eden, we find patience has been something that God's people have had to have. Had Adam really demonstrated or possessed his soul with patience in the garden, perhaps things would have turned out differently. And the what-if scenarios are what they are. They give you something interesting to think about, we know are impossible. But yet, when Eve, being deceived, she really not understanding, thinking right was wrong and wrong was right, if Adam had had more patience, if Adam had possessed his soul in such a way that he endured through that difficulty and was willing to take the time to teach her, show her, and for her to be mad at him for a little while because he didn't eat the fruit, you know, things would have possibly been different. And as you consider down through the years and the examples of God's people, we find that patience has always been a requirement. Since there in the garden when God promised that the Messiah would come as the seed of the woman, how long did it take for Messiah to come? It took 4,000 years, give or take. It took that long for Messiah to come. And it took the patience or the constant enduring and perseverance of God's people down through those years to deal with that. Day in and day out, week in and week out, they had to go through the rigorous process of the sacrificing of the animals in order to worship God and stay right with God and to learn about who God is, as we talked about last Sunday. They had to endure. They had to have great patience as those types and shadows and figures and those the anticipation of Christ built down through the years. But even after Christ came to the earth, you know, many expected and were looking for a Messiah that would enter in a dramatic fashion and set up His earthly kingdom at that moment and fulfill all of the Old Testament prophecies at that moment that concerned the Messiah. But we find patience was once again expected or needed, because those that came to know Christ as He came on the scene, as John the Baptist preached, as Christ preached, as eventually the apostles preached and church was established, they had to have patience. They had to endure. They had to have the understanding, hey, this isn't just for a minute, but this is a lifetime. that we're talking about here. We often relate it to a marathon instead of a sprint, the race that we run, the life that we live. And it has to be run with a great deal of patience. We are called upon to possess our souls in patience, to occupy until He comes, as it says in here in Luke. He expects us to do it with patience, to endure. And that means patiently dealing with with man, with the times, with ourselves. It takes patience to deal with sin. Have you ever thought of that? I don't mean patience in that we should or we are expected to keep, the pet sins around and we, just say, oh, it's okay, and overlook them. That's not what I'm talking about. It takes patience to deal with temptation and with sin. When the devil comes to you and he presents that temptation, when he brings to you that opportunity to sin and dishonor God, you have to have patience, because a lot of times what he does is bring that over and over and over and over again. And what do we want to do? We just want to at some point throw up our hands and say, it's not worth it. He's on my last nerve. I can't resist that anymore. There is no point to resist it anymore. It's easier if I just give in. But doesn't it take patience to deal with temptation? Sure it does. God has made ways of escape. God won't allow us to be tempted more than we can bear. We all know that we have these things in common, and that is good. But it takes patience to endure the attacks. Our morals are attacked every day. Our way of life is attacked every day in this country. I mean, as we expose ourselves to the news and we expose ourselves to people out in the workplace and family and friends and what's going on in this world, it is under constant attack. And so it also takes patience not just to deal with temptation and with sin, but it also takes patience to be able to remain faithful unto the Lord in this current climate that we live in. Because it would be very easy for us, again, to throw up the hands and say, it's just not worth it, I'm done. It's just not worth it, I don't want to fight the good fight of faith anymore and go into error, which is much easier in a lot of ways. It'd be easier if we could fill, a Sunday service with, more taking up time, more music, more entertainment, more of these things that people want to see. We would be able to do many more things as far as the flesh is concerned and this world is concerned. But you know what? It takes patience as individuals as we deal with that, because every day your morals, your values, your convictions are attacked. As you're around the water cooler at work, as you're talking to your friends at school, as you are dealing with your family members, they're constantly trying to tear down that which is good and right and that which is important to you, whether they realize it or not. Whether they are doing it as a concerted effort or not, they are doing it still. The news does it every day. Politics does it. All these things. And what it takes is patience. Not patience in like putting up with it and saying, well, we'll just ignore that and all this kind of stuff. No, patience as we've defined it today. This enduring perseverance to say, okay, it's under attack, but that's fine with me. Okay, it costs me some things, but that's fine with me. Okay, it's difficult, but that's fine with me, because I know in the end what it's going to mean. As a church, it takes patience. Have you ever thought about a church itself or herself having patience? From the pulpit to the pew, every member in between, not just dealing with each other, but patience to stay the course. Patience to still go into the community and hang those door hangers. Patience to still stick with the stuff when, a visitor walks in and says, oh, this is a little church kind of thing. Patience it takes as a church to not look around and be discouraged, because we would like to see every single seat filled. We'd like to see every service end with people being saved and not just a show of emotion. It takes patience to contend for the faith, as Jude verse 3 tells us we've been called to do. It isn't something that we can do without patience or this endurance. We do wait for that which has been promised to us with hope. And we patiently wait, knowing that it will be delivered to us. Now, in thinking about this phrase, it says, in patience possess ye your souls. As we've already said, we are to have patience. We are to exercise that patience in relationship to each other, in a relationship to God, in order to serve Him. That's what it means by possess ye your souls. It's talking about the frame of your existence. It's talking about your conversation, your walk. We talked about wisdom's walk a few weeks ago. And that walk has to be seasoned with patience and endurance, because patience honors God. Do you think it really honors God when we lose our temper with each other, or when we lose it as far as saying, nope, not going to resist that anymore, I'm just going to give in? Do you think that it honors God when we fail in that sense? Of course, the answer is no. But if we can put aside the selfish draw of our flesh to say that what I want's more important, put ourselves last, and have patience with the person we're dealing with, the situation we're dealing with, to wait upon the Lord, that certainly does honor God. And it will cause our lives to reflect Christ more and more and glorify Him more and more, becoming more like Christ. And as we consider about possessing our souls with this patience, as it talks about here, it takes a great amount of trust in the Lord, doesn't it? It takes a great amount of trust, because we have been promised a great many things. Even just thinking about what we've been promised in Christ that will come. Brother Jack was praying about heaven and admitted, as we all must, that we don't know exactly what it's going to be like. We know it's going to be glorious. We know it's going to be greater than anything we can imagine, but yet none of us have concrete proof that it's going to be anything better than what we've got here. All you have is faith. All you have is what the Word of God says. And yes, that's proof enough for me, but I'm just saying, when you look at it objectively from the flesh, you don't have anything but that. So what does it take? It takes trust. You must trust God that, as Paul says, it will be even as it has been told us in the end. And we can patiently endure because of that fact. And I think that's what is really at the heart of this passage, the context here. And I didn't even realize this until I was looking over it this afternoon before church tonight, how similar this passage is to the one we read in Hebrews. But the context of this passage is the same as Matthew 24. And you know what Matthew 24's context is. It's Christ giving a detailed blow-by-blow accounting to His disciples, and then in a larger way to Israel, of what the build-up to, the beginning of, the middle of, and the duration of the tribulation period is all about, and what's going to happen. He gives them a detailed accounting of it. So that way they can know, they can see, they can judge when these things are happening and what their response should be to them as it unfolds. And it is in the middle of such a context that Christ here says, in your patience possess ye your souls. Because they are going to endure affliction, they are going to endure trial, they are going to endure a great many things that are hard for us to process and to understand. If you go back to verse number 12, he tells them to be patient in persecution. He says, but before all these, they shall lay their hands on you and persecute you, delivering you up to the synagogues and into prisons, being brought before kings and rulers for my name's sake. And it shall turn to you for a testimony. He's telling them here what's going to happen. And again, the climax here in verse number 19 is, be patient in these things. Possess your souls in patience. So when the government brings persecution upon you, he says, be patient. Be patient. That doesn't mean just keep your anger in check. It did mean that. It does mean that. But more than that, it means to understand what the end result of this is going to be. And he gives them the entire story. We're more familiar with Matthew 24 and how it lays out, but there in that passage and here as well, it culminates in telling them that they will finally see Christ come to this earth and be restored as a nation unto God, be saved. He says, in patience, possess your souls. Understand what's going on. Understand what will happen. Look forward to that time and realize that what you're enduring now is not all that there will be. And he even tells them there in verse number 14, have patience in their words. It says, verse 14, he says, settle it therefore in your hearts, not to meditate before what ye shall answer. For I will give you a mouth and wisdom, which all your adversaries shall not be able to gainsay nor resist. He's saying here that even when you are put in that position, have patience. Have patience in that you allow me to speak through you. You allow me to deliver the words. He says, don't even meditate. Don't even worry about it. Don't even prepare. And don't allow your flesh to overtake. But instead, he says, let me speak through you. That's possessing your soul in patience. I mean, when we deal with people that are trying our last nerve, when we are dealing with persecution or anything in between, how wise is it to follow the example or the command that Christ gives here? To not allow our flesh to speak angrily, to not try to go above those things, but instead to allow Christ to speak through us. That's patience. Because there's a lot of times we want to give people a piece of our mind. But when we think about that, you know, if we did that, we wouldn't have much left for ourselves, would we? If we gave someone a piece of our mind every time we wanted to. He says, don't worry about it. He says, I'll talk for you. I'll tell you what to say. And I think a lot of times we undervalue that. Have patience. He'll provide, is what he's telling them. He'll provide the very words during this most difficult time. Notice in verse 16, he also tells them to be patient with their own that turn against him. And ye shall be betrayed both by parents and brethren and kinsfolk and friends. And some of you shall they cause to be put to death. And ye shall be hated of all men for my name's sake. He tells them here of the reality that those that should love them the most will hate them the most. And this specifically, again, is talking about that time. But how this does apply to our lives, we can learn. He says, in that situation where they hate you, where they will cause you to be put to death, understand, you need to deal with that in patience. Possess your soul in patience. What did Christ say when they railed against him upon the cross? He said, Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do. Stephen was able to say the same. And that is an example of possessing your soul in great patience and endurance. Being preserved. Because what difference did it make if Christ or if Stephen looked at one of those men and gave them the what for what they were doing? What difference did it make if he yelled at him and called him names or told him he was dumb and that he would get what's coming to him? Did any of that matter? Wouldn't it made a bit of difference, would it? And so we need to think about what being patient means. It's such a broad application in our lives. And he tells them here, when those that love you or should love you the most are against you, he says, deal with it with patience. And the thing about patience is, it's sort of like the time when Christ told his disciples, turn the other cheek. A lot of times it feels like we're not getting anything done. It feels like we're losing. It feels like, you know, well, how am I making a difference? Or what is this accomplishing? But it says so much to others when they see God's people act in patience. Such a great testimony. Such a great example lived before them. And he tells them here in verse number 18 what the basis for their hope or their patience should be. He says, all of this is true, but there shall not an hair of your head perish. He promised them as a nation deliverance. As a nation, he promises them deliverance. He promises them that in the end it will be okay. Some of them will, he says, die. But yet, overall, then the Jewish nation will see restoration at this time. And he says, because of that, in patience possess your souls. Realize that there is deliverance coming. There is no doubt that waiting upon the Lord or having patience is especially hard when suffering is involved. Even if that suffering is mental or that suffering is emotional. Waiting is hard. It's difficult. Having patience is hard. It's difficult. You want to give up. But we need to patiently wait upon the Lord. I'm here to tell you that what he describes here and tells them to be patient in, it takes great courage. Even in our own lives, it takes great courage to be a patient people. How easy it is to fit in and fly off the handle or just quit. You know, churches, I guess they're not filled because many of them have left, but churches over the course of time have had many people that have just quit. When the going gets tough, they just stop because they don't want to endure. They don't want to go forward. Takes great courage for that. Psalms 27:14 tells us that. Wait upon the Lord and be of good courage. Understand, it takes that courage to be patient. It takes greater courage to be patient, turn the other cheek, and to deal with each other in this way, to deal with this world in this way, than it does to act like the world. And we need to remember that. That's how Christ acted and was. Now go with me to the book of James. This may not be the easiest message to outline, I suppose, that we've had, but all of this has been building up to this passage in James. Because I liken it to what we just saw there in the Jewish nation. They will be restored. There is a deliverance coming for them. But until that time, they are going to have to endure and possess their souls in patience. Okay, now we are not going to have to go through any part of the tribulation period, but I want you to take in likeness to that and apply it to where we are. We believe as God's people that deliverance is coming. We believe that it is coming for us. But until we reach that time, we are going to have to patiently endure and persevere. And we are going to have to understand how to deal with these things in patience. We will not be part of that tribulation period. But understand, we do have deliverance on the way. Read here in James 5. Verse number 7. James 5 and verse number 7, first three words, be patient therefore. And if we were to have read the other six verses and have studied even the larger context of James, he's dealing with right now those that are rich, those that seem to have everything that they want, those that seem to be getting everything and all of that but not serving the Lord. He says here in verse 7, be patient therefore, brethren. Be patient. Why should we be patient? How long do we have to endure? How long do we have to, steadfastly have forbearance concerning this life and this world? It says, be patient therefore, brethren, unto the coming of the Lord. Oh, what a relief. What a joy will be experienced at the rapture. And that's what he's talking about here. He's talking about the coming of the Lord in the air for his people. When the trumpet sounds and we rise up to meet him in the air, he says, be patient unto that day. It is coming. And it will be an act of final deliverance and redemption for God's people. The dead in Christ will rise and be reunited with their body, be glorified, and with Christ, the alive and the saved will rise up off of the earth, be glorified of body, will be delivered. And you know what? From that moment forward, we will never again need to have patience with anything. We'll never have to have patience like we have had to have here upon the earth. Now, God has had to have patience in dealing with us. But when we reach heaven and we become like Christ, we are not going to have patience to deal with each other anymore. Because we'll all be glorified. We'll all be in heaven. We're not going to have patience to deal with anybody that's against us, whether it's individually or as a church, because it's not going to be present. We're not going to have to endure the hardships of life or tribulations in patience, because none of that is going to be there. It's only going to be blessing and happiness. The example that he gives here in verse number seven, he says, "Behold, the husbandman waiteth for the precious fruit of the earth, and hath long patience for it, until he receive the early and latter rain. Be ye also patient." He gives the example of an husbandman, of a gardener, of a farmer, of one that has a green thumb. He says, you know, that husbandman doesn't plant and then the next day harvest. He doesn't even plant and then water and feed and allow things to grow and then at the first sign of fruit begin to pick. Now he waits for the early and the latter rain. He doesn't just rush into it and take a little bit when he knows that if he allows it to run its course, that he can have the full harvest. And he says that we are to be patient just as that husbandman. We are to realize that God is still saving his people. That the early rain has passed and the latter rain is now falling still upon the earth. And that the coming of the Lord is nigh. We are to be patient unto that day. Don't get impatient and lose hope. Don't get impatient and quit. Don't get impatient and stop serving the Lord before that day. Don't give up. He says, continue. You know, when you plant, and we're not farmers, most of us are, some of us have little gardens that we, ours is tiny, but compared to some. But you know, we like to see it grow and we like to harvest. And sometimes you stand, it's like you stand there and wait, come on, grow, let's have some already. And it's a good lesson in what exactly this is talking about. Because the Lord's return was promised back there in Acts chapter 1, verse 11. As you see him go, he'll come in like manner. Paul further expounded and explained it so that we could understand it today. And that was nearly 2,000 years ago. But Peter says, understand that even if they scoff, Christ is still coming. Have patience and wait. He says here in verse number 8, to establish your heart, for the coming of the Lord draweth nigh. Two wonderful verses to rally us, to encourage us. In the little things, dealing with people, dealing with small annoyances, dealing with things getting on your nerve, all the way up to the big things and the persecutions you suffer and the temptations to quit and to stop serving the Lord, and everything in between, these two verses encourage us to continue being patient in this life, to learn patience, to possess your soul in patience as it draws near. And he gives some direct example here, expectation. In verse 9, he says, "Grudge not one against another, brethren, lest ye be condemned. Behold, the judge standeth before the door. Take my brethren, the prophets, who have spoken in the name of the Lord, for an example of suffering affliction and of patience." He says there in verse 9, grudge not one against another. And we can apply that specifically to holding grudges and to being kind. But think about it in a broader context, say like a church covenant relationship we have. He's saying, hold that up. He's saying, treat each other as you should. Because as the last days unfold and the coming of the Lord is closer and closer, you know what? It's going to be harder and harder to do that. And I believe that. Sometimes, you know, it's hard to compare times and all that. I get it. But I think Satan is working harder than ever today to destroy the Lord's churches. And he's working harder in the lives of his people to put up walls and wedges and drive churches apart. And he's saying here, don't grudge against each other. Don't hold things against each other. Don't be driven apart. But have patience. Have patience when people don't react as you think they should to a certain situation or circumstance. Have patience when they make a mistake, when they sin, when they fail, when they fall. Have patience when they say something they really didn't mean. And as a group, have patience to stay with the truth throughout and until the coming of the Lord. And he reminds us, the judge standing at the door, he's coming. He's coming. And he goes on there in verse number 10 to use the brethren or the prophets as an example. He says, they've suffered affliction and they've had patience. And we could name some examples. We could name some examples of men that struggled with patience and were patient at other times, like Elijah. I mean, on Mount Carmel, he showed a great deal of patience when he dealt with the prophets of Baal. But then he went and sat under that juniper tree and showed a lot of impatience. We need to possess our souls with our patience, as Christ says. And then he uses him as an example. In verse 11, he says, behold, we count them happy which endure. Think of the word happy here as blessed. We count them blessed which endure. And he gives as an example of Job. He says, ye have heard of the patience of Job, and have seen the end of the Lord, that the Lord is very pitiful and of tender mercy. He says, think about Job and his example and how the Lord dealt with him and all the things that he went through and how he experienced and how the Lord blessed him in the end greater than in the beginning, and how that he endured and was blessed for it. I mean, just think about those things. And that's the example that's given. And so we are encouraged greatly today to be patient unto the coming of the Lord, because patience really is a great measure of maturity in Christ. We all have been saved for a number of years. The longer that we've been saved, the more patience that we ought to have. Christ doesn't say, if you have patience, possess your souls. No, he says, in your patience, possess ye your souls. He's not saying, if you've got it, and if you don't, that's okay. No, he says, the patience you've got, use it, and then gain more. And then allow that to work. Let's close in James chapter 1. James chapter 1. Verse number 3, well, let's read verse 2. He says, my brethren, count it all joy when you fall into divers temptations, knowing this, that the trying of your faith worketh patience. But let patience have her perfect work, that you may be perfect and entire, wanting nothing. If any of you lack wisdom, let him ask of God, that giveth to all men liberally, and upbraideth not, and it shall be given him. We used verse 5 a few weeks ago in talking about walking in wisdom. But notice here, patience in verse number 3 and 4. The trying of our faith worketh patience. Okay? We can see that. We can understand that. As we are going through tribulation and trial or have our faith tested, it teaches us to endure. It teaches us to be steadfast, to persevere. But what is patience work? What is patience end? He says here in verse 4, but let patience have her perfect work. What is that? It says that ye may be perfect and entire, wanting nothing. The word perfect, of course, means mature, complete. That you may be entire, that your character, your personage as a Christian would be complete and you would be whole. We can't be whole without this patience. And that is what it is working. You can't be mature if you lack patience in the Lord. We need to see that. We need to possess our souls with the patience that we have and don't think ourselves to be mature unless we are able to use that patience in the way that we've seen here tonight. And for all the verses that we've noticed both this morning and tonight about patience, there are more. Peter, we didn't even turn to, talks about patience and adding it to virtue. And in other places, it talks about our patience and how it affects our lives and the things that we do. And I thought about Moses and his example of striking the rock instead of speaking to it. Why? Because he was impatient with the people of God. There are many times and many examples about patience all throughout the Word of God. The question is, where do we stand? How do we see this subject of patience? I hope that today, if it's done nothing else for you, that it broadens your understanding of what patience really is and how it can apply and affect and really bless our lives every day. Because those that are endure are happy, as James says. Let's stand when my brother Mike and just come.